Maine's film scene. Summer means different things to different people. For cinephiles in Maine, it is the start of film festival season. One of Maine's oldest and biggest film festivals begins tomorrow in Waterville. The Maine International Film Festival will show 100 films over 9 days. The new Midcoast Film Fest opens July 26th. Then, fall brings the Camden International Film Festival, the International Maritime Film Festival, the Maine Outdoor Film Festival, the Emerge Film Festival, the Sanford International Film Festival, and Maine's first Yiddish Culture Festival, which is associated with the 23rd Maine Jewish Film Festival. I'm Jennifer Rooks. The film community here is putting Maine on the map, not only for festivals, but also helping to encourage film making in Maine. We'll discuss what's happening next on Maine Calling, but first, news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. If you like to see a range of films beyond the big mainstream movies, Maine is a good place to be. A number of Maine-based film festivals and venues present screenings all through the year, and a community of filmmakers are producing movies here. Today, we are going to learn about the film scene in Maine. Joining me in the studio, Louise Rosen. She is a media executive who worked for decades in international film production and distribution, and she was formerly the executive director of the Maine Jewish Film Festival. She is also founding director of the Points North Documentary Forum at the Camden International Film Festival. Ken Eisen is co-founder and programming director for the Maine International Film Festival and co-founder of Railroad Square Cinema. And Tom Handel is president of the Maine Film Association and executive director of the Portland Media Center. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you ever been to any of the film festivals in Maine? Are you a filmmaker or want to know more about making films in Maine? Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email at talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to you all. And Ken, I'm going to start with you because this is your time in the sun. Thank you for driving from Waterville. Tomorrow the festival begins, yes?
That is true. And it's actually our time not in the sun. It's our time in the shade in movie theaters.
In the air conditioning.
Yeah, I think that'll be necessary some of this next week. But yeah.
So tell us about the Maine International Film Festival this year. I understand you're opening with a Maine-made film.
We are indeed. It's a film called Blow the Man Down, and it's premiere in the Northeast, and it's a kind of Coen Brothers-esque, but Maine set in the not very picturesque time of Maine, like end of March, beginning of April, and it's a little funky, and it's not picture postcard Maine, and what happens in the film is not either, but it's very funny, it's very original, and I think people are going to have a ball watching it.
Did I read correctly that you're presenting 100 films?
It's about 100 every year. It's a cut under that, but not much, counting the shorts. And there's 4 great programs of shorts, yeah.
Well, I want to get back to how you figured that out, but I want to bring others into the conversation. Louise, you've been involved with film festivals as well as other film-related endeavors in Maine, including the Maine Jewish Film Festival. How did it come about?
Oh, my gosh. It started actually with some screenings in the basement of a synagogue, and it grew from there. I came in 2012 and ran the festival for 4 years and expanded it from mostly Portland-based to other parts of the state as well. And that has continued, which is wonderful. And we collaborate with Ken and the Maine Film Center up in Waterville, as well as Brunswick and Rockland, and I shouldn't say we anymore since I'm not there, but yes, it has continued to be a statewide kind of event.
I think we is anybody who cares about film in Maine. So tell us about Points North at the Camden International Film Festival. That's kind of your baby too, isn't it?
Well, I got it off the ground. The whole idea was the importance of professional development for the film community here and throughout New England, and it was modeled really on a training idea of helping filmmakers to develop their skills at pitching their ideas and to bring people in from the outside, decision makers who could give them feedback and potentially fall in love with their projects and help support them. So You know, that started a number of years ago, and now the folks at CIF, or at the Points North Institute, as it's now called, have really turned that into quite a powerhouse with a number of different training programs for filmmakers in addition to the annual festival. It's really become quite something.
And this is predominantly for documentary filmmakers,
yes,
correct?
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay. And Tom, tell us about the Maine Film Association. What is the scope of the Maine Film Association?
Well, just in the last 2 years, we've kind of shifted the scope a little bit to encourage more skill development among filmmakers. We did a little research. We did some listening sessions about 2 years ago in Lewiston and in Portland, and then we did an online survey, and we found out that local filmmakers wanted to meet each other. They wanted to network. They wanted to get more skill training. So we do basically about a workshop once a month. We have screenings of Maine-made films where we have the producer come in and have talkbacks so that people get more exposure to what's going on in the film scene in Maine. And then we also have after-hours mixers with different organizations like the Maine Theater Collective and other artistic groups that we can collaborate with.
How much filmmaking is being done in Maine? Is going on in Maine? And the next question is going to be, what's the potential? But answer the first question.
There really is quite a lot going on in Maine right now. And I think it's important not to just look at feature films. You know, there's quite a list on the Maine Film Office website. But there's also a lot of short films being done, films being done by people who are self-funded or, you know, do crowdsourcing sort of funding, and people making a living doing commercials and developing their talents that way. There's a bunch of film festivals or sort of film festivals like Damnation Land over the last 10 years have generated over 60 films made by local producers, young people who spend their weekends and evenings outside of their regular jobs doing films. So there's quite a lot of talent in Maine, and trying to bring it all together and trying to develop it so that more people see it and use it is kind of the focus right now of the Maine Film Association.
Okay, and what about potential? I have a sense that there's so much more potential here in this state.
There is
filmmaking.
There is a lot of potential in Maine for filmmaking. The thing that I run into, and I'm kind of new at this, I've just been president for a couple of years, but what we see is a lot of filmmakers in Maine, people with talent going out of state for work, and a lot of production companies coming into the state and using out-of-state workers. So we're trying to kind of bridge that gap, trying to create more content creators here in Maine, encourage and develop that. The idea of doing tax incentives to bring in out-of-state crews that would use a certain percentage of local talent is an okay idea, but we really want to generate a hub, a development center right here in Maine that develops the local talent and uses the local talent. I would just, a kind of an ironic thing that I just thought about today, I was an actor in a commercial, a political commercial, where it said that the opponent was out of touch with Maine values, and I was the only one on the set from Maine for that. So the irony was it just struck me today for the first time, because I'm getting a lot of input from my board members about the show, and I'm thinking, yeah, that did happen. And all that talent, all that could have been done here in Maine.
Louise, I saw you nodding in agreement.
Well, I think it's a kind of classic story that we've heard over the years that there is a lot of talent here, but the access to professional development opportunities is more limited. You know, geographically, it's such a huge state. And while there are programs and resources in places like Boston and New York, that's not necessarily so easy for folks here to get to. So the idea of trying to bring more of it here and to try to cultivate it, peer-to-peer training. John Courtney, when he was at Space, started the Maine Nonfiction Producers Meetup. That serves in some of the ways that Tom has described. So this whole idea of trying to kind of coalesce and bring people's experience together to share it, very important in this type of a community. Not everyone can afford the training programs, and so sometimes it's essential to just be able to share.
Yeah, yeah, and maybe work on somebody's film and learn from them. I want to get a little bit back to the festivals. Ken, I want to know about your process, about when do you start thinking about the festival? How do you curate? How do you choose what to include? Are you trying to mix older films and newer films, main films, international films, all of the above?
All of the above, basically, is the answer. We do a retrospective section, depending on who our guests are. We do a restoration section every year. So we do films, classic films that people don't know more often than not. Wonderful Mexican film, for instance, this year, Enamorada from 1946, that's just been restored by the UCLA Film Archives and the Film Foundation, and a bunch of others that are just wonderful to discover. And we're showing that in a new 35mm print, and there's 9 or 10 of those, and that's mixed in with new films. There's 3 features made in Maine and 7 or 8 shorts curated as a shorts Maine Shorts program by Karen Young. And so it's a mixture. Film is pretty wide, and we try to cover it all. We do have, only films that have never been shown in Maine for the new films, only films that have never not opened theatrically. So everything that you're going to see at the festival, unless it's a restoration, in which case it's a new version of that, is a brand new film to audiences.
So every single film is something you cannot find by streaming it.
You could find some of the older films, but not looking like this. The newer films you cannot find on streaming, and you can't find in your local theater either.
Have you watched every film that's going to be part of the festival?
All of the features, yes.
Wow. And Louise, you've done this. How does your curating process work?
Well, at MJFF, there's a screening committee. I'm not sure if Ken works with a committee, but... you really get so many submissions that you need help filtering through things. And you have meetings that assess, you know, what direction do we want to go in this year? What does the landscape look like? And then people go through the screening process and you share notes and have meetings. And then more people screen and you eventually sort of filter out your layers and come to some final conclusions. But it's tough because there's a lot of good work to see. And what's great, though, is when you're discussing the submissions with your colleagues is to really get a sense of, oh, yeah, I didn't think about how the audience might appreciate this versus that. It's good to have perspective. It really helps to keep it fresh.
Let's talk about the whole idea of going to a movie. So many of us watch movies at home now. Most of us have televisions that are so much higher quality, or maybe television's even the wrong word, monitors that are so much more beautiful than what we could have even imagined in our childhood. Why go to a film festival? Why watch a movie in a theater?
Well, I would say that for filmmakers, whether you're talking about an emerging or a veteran filmmaker, being exposed to other people's work is really essential. And too often we get caught in our bubble of, you know, our particular area of interest, and we don't take advantage of these opportunities. So it's important for kind of opening up your perspective. But there's also nothing can beat the shared experience of sitting in the dark and feeling how you and the rest of the audience members are reacting to something. And then when the lights come up afterwards, I mean, sometimes you're just, you know, you're practically in one another's arms because of how you've felt in that experience of watching that film together.
Ken.
Yeah, I think Louise said that extremely lucidly. We think watching a movie in a theater with other people in the dark where you can't turn it off, you can walk out and go to the bathroom, but you're not going unless you really want to. And then you're having this collective experience and you're seeing the film. Yeah, there are wonderful screens, but it's still not the same experience as seeing it projected from a beautiful DCP projection or a beautiful 35mm print. You can't have that elsewhere. And it's a collective experience, and it's instead of an isolating experience, which is what the opposite is, and that's what we do most of the time now.
I also, we have screenings of films, and then we have the director right there. I know that a lot of these online and devices, not going to a movie theater, separates people from each other. So just like Ken and Louise said, it's a place to bring people together and respond to a movie. But also, a lot of the films being produced in Maine are, you know, talking about current issues. That we just screened a movie called The Kids We Lose, about the treatment of children who are special needs in public schools, and what a discussion followed from that. And you can't do that online. You can't really share and develop community and a spirit of community and bring important issues like that online. You have to be in a community, in a theater, watching it and experience it together.
And that's Maine filmmaker Lisa Wolfinger. We're going to go to Bea, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Bea. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm just like an aspiring filmmaker, and I'm changing like the type of format that I'm using. I want to use like older, like not 35 millimeter, but I guess it's like 8 millimeter film. But I'm looking for resources. It's something that people haven't really used typically, I guess, that I can find. And I'm just trying to figure out, like, I guess what I'm doing, like who I can talk to for resources. Like,
sure,
you know,
where to start? Louise is smiling.
Well, Bea, I would recommend check online for the names Tony Treadway and Bob Brodsky. They're based in the Boston area, but they have really cultivated a depth of experience in 8 millimeter that I think very few people across the country have. I know that they are used as a resource by a lot of other filmmakers. If you're looking for 16 millimeter, you can probably find some people even here in Maine who still wield a 16 millimeter camera. And the Maine Media Workshops up the coast in Rockport, there are probably some classes there that will go between digital formats and film. And so you might want to check with them and see if they've got some recommendations. I don't know. Ken and Tom, can you think of any 16 folks around here?
Not offhand, but I think if you sent an email to info@mainfilm.org, we could put it out to our membership. We have hundreds of members, so that somebody might there have a local resource that maybe you could use.
All right. Well, Bea, thank you so much for your call, and good luck to you. Has the change in the price of the equipment for filmmaking opened the door to a greater variety of films you all are seeing?
Well, I think that there are literally more films being made now than before. I think that's unquestionably true. I think that's a great thing in many ways, and also there's another side to it, which is there's a lot of stuff that can be made kind of too easily and not with the amount of thought and care and even depth of feeling that's necessary for a film to be really great. So it goes two ways for me.
Mm. I'm a bit of a Luddite in this regard. I actually wish that we were still working more often in 16 because I think it requires a level of discipline in the process and thoughtfulness. And the temptation with digital formats is to just keep shooting and shooting. And then when filmmakers come to me for editorial or business advice and they say, well, I've got 250 hours of video.
Oh,
and I say, oh, please don't darken my door because that, you know, can become its own kind of nightmare. So it's a line in there for sure.
Just putting on my other hat as executive director of the Portland Media Center, where we train people to make their own videos, for a while we thought we might close down because we thought with all the cell phones and the distribution through Vimeo and YouTube, people just can do their own thing. But what we saw was that when we put out classes at night, made them more available, same thing with the training of MFA, people really appreciate collaborating together. Film is an extremely collaborative art, and it really brings people together to make a film, not just to watch the film in the theater, but to make film. So even though there are more films being made, I think people are still thirsting for that sense of collaboration and community.
We're talking about the film scene in Maine. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Holocaust and Human Rights Center of Maine, inviting you to learn about Maine's Holocaust survivors at the Michael Klar Center in Augusta. hhrcmaine.org.
The Trump administration is looking to scale back a program that protects military family members who have come to the country illegally from being deported. U.S. service members are worried.
I feel like my world's crashing down, you know, if I come back home to find out that, you know, my mother's been deported or something of the sort.
I'm Audie Cornish. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered today at 4 here on Maine Public Radio. This week, our Maine Public News Tell Me More tour is heading to Ogunquit. As Maine Public News travels the state to hear directly from you, Learn what you feel are the most important issues in your community and how Maine Public News can best serve you and keep you informed. We'll be in Ogunquit this evening at 5:30 at the Ogunquit Museum of American Art at 543 Shore Road. Our discussion will be led by Deputy News Director Susan Sharon with news reporter Patty White, who will also share their experiences about reporting in Maine and some of the projects and stories they're working on. For more information about all the Tell Me More tour visits, please visit mainepublic.org and click on events or the banner ad.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we are talking about the film community in Maine. Joining me, Ken Eisen, who is co-founder of the Maine International Film Festival, which starts tomorrow, and co-founder of Railroad Square Cinema. Tom Handel is president of the Maine Film Association and executive director of the Portland Media Center. And Louise Rosen is a media executive with international film production and distribution experience. She was also formerly with the Maine Jewish Film Festival and is founding director of the Points North Documentary Forum. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining me on the line now is Karen Carberry Warhola. She is director of the Maine Film Office. Thanks so much for calling in, Karen.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me what the Maine Film Office does.
Well, the Maine Film Office is within the Office of Tourism at the Department of Economic and Community Development, and we promote the state as a filming location. We recruit productions, and we provide essential support services and resources for productions that film in Maine. We work to increase production in Maine and encourage productions to hire crew and source goods and services locally.
How much filmmaking is happening currently in Maine, and are there estimates of how the film industry contributes to the Maine economy?
Approximately $50 million annually in economic impact from projects that filmed in Maine. And as an example of how much that films in Maine, in 2018, we had three indie films, Blow the Man Down, which you can see at the Maine International Film Festival, and then Portraiture and Bride in the Box. We also have a TV series that's on Do-It-Yourself Network, the Maine Cabin Masters. They did a couple of documentaries. CNN and Smithsonian Channel did documentaries in 2018. And then there's another network series, Puckland, on HTV, Travel Channel, Cooking Channel, and a lot of other productions filmed in Maine. And so far in 2019, we've had two new films already shot in Maine. One was Allagash with Tom Berenger, and the other one was Bone Cold.
Oh, wow. Well, Karen, thanks so much for calling in. That's Karen Carberry Warhola with the Maine Film Office. Martin on Facebook says a great movie called Holly Star was produced in and around Biddeford last year. And then Andrew on Facebook says, thanks for highlighting Maine's film festivals. I hope folks will also check out Maine's newest, the Midcoast Film Fest, kicking off its first season Friday night, July 26th at Lincoln Theater in Damariscotta. And he has shared on our Facebook page the link to that festival. Andrew told us that he has been studying the other film festivals in Maine as being very careful to sort of carve out a niche that doesn't sort of step on the others. So it seems as though there's a lot of room for growth in the film festival world. Would you agree?
I think an infinite number of film festivals are possible. It's just what you do with them. And so it's very exciting, the possibilities. And what's great about film festivals is that it does enable people to get excited about film as a medium, to experience them together, and to not just go, oh, that's something I'm going to fill in my time with, but to talk about film as a medium in culture.
If someone's listening to this and thinking, gosh, I've always meant to go to a film festival, but how would I pick what to see? Give us some guidance for film festival neophytes. How to approach something like this incredible catalog I have in front of me for the Maine International Film Festival?
Well, I think you take a look and you see what interests you. And maybe you know an actor, or maybe you know a director, or maybe you see a genre, or maybe you see a still image that you like, and or you read a description. And if it sounds good to you, then you go see it, because in the case of our festival, in any case, these are films that you're not going to be able to have pre-digested to you. It's not going to be something that comes out of the Marvel comic world, turned into a $150 million budgeted film and then advertised to you for 2 months ahead of time. You're going to discover this film for yourself. And you may not absolutely love it. You may not love that pre-digested one either. But you're going to come to your own opinion about it. And that's what's really exciting, I think.
Luis?
Well, certainly there are also the opportunities with festival websites to look at trailers. You can do that in the comfort of your own home. And then, as Ken says, you take a look at the information available and figure out what appeals to you. I think one of the great things that all of our film festivals do in the state is connect with local audiences over particular topics. So, you know, Camden Film Festival has shown a number of films related to coastal communities and fishing and seafaring in various ways. I know MIF has done those kinds of, made those similar kinds of connections within the central Maine community particularly, and certainly the Maine Jewish Film Festival is doing that kind of across ethnic groups and finding ways of bringing speakers that connect with the films. You know, and that's the other thing too about how you identify what you might pick. It can be great to actually go see a film where the filmmaker is going to be present for a Q&A afterwards, or whether where there might be special guests to come and talk about that subject. So that kind of is value added.
Yeah, I'm very picky about what films I get see, especially in a movie theater where I don't move or can't change the channel or anything like that. But I think for me, looking at the range of films and seeing where my interests are, what I'd like to see, being informed more. And I agree with Louise, when the producer or the filmmaker is present and able to discuss it, that's a great opportunity for me. That's something that I target.
Calling in now is Ben Fowley. He is executive director and artistic director of the Points North Institute and founder of the Camden International Film Festival. Thanks for calling in, Ben.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Jennifer. I appreciate it.
Explain the overarching goals of Points North. Louise touched on it a little bit, but how that relates to the Camden International Film Festival.
Sure. CIF, the festival, is entering its 15th year. We're celebrating our 15th edition September 12th through 15th. And I'd say probably about 5 years ago, our team was really just trying to find ways to get more involved with the filmmaking process, the messy creative process that documentary filmmakers must endure to get a, you know, finished film on the screen. And we had developed various programming, like our Points North pitch session, which Louise was around and helped really establish 11 years ago, actually. They were trying to find ways for filmmakers that have projects in development get their work in front of audiences and industry members. And the big step for us was about three and a half years ago, we launched the Points North Institute. It's an umbrella organization. CIF is a program of Points North. It's our largest program. But what we've been able to do over the past 3.5-4 years is build out a suite of artist programs that are really focused on trying to discover and nurture the next generation of nonfiction storytellers, working in all mediums, mostly film, some interactive and new media, but really, again, just trying to make sure that we're curating really great new talent, diverse voices, bringing them to Maine, and connecting them with a really safe creative space for them to find their voice, develop their voice, take those next critical steps as filmmakers towards a sustainable career, which I'm sure Louise has touched on already, is a very challenging thing. Filmmaking is there's no clear path for anybody. So we feel very lucky to be part of the process and making sure artists and filmmakers have at least a roadmap.
Well, Ben, I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to ask you, how is this point in time for nonfiction filmmaking, for documentary filmmaking? Is there a renaissance or is it tougher than ever?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, you know, depending on what side of the spectrum you are, you might say it's a renaissance, and others might say, hey, we've been here for a while doing this great work. I think what it is there's certainly more platforms, more opportunities for work to get out and be seen by audiences, theoretically speaking. But I also think that there's just a lot of content being made. So you'll hear these things like content is king right now in the sense of it really is everything. But the challenges, I think, are that the places that are acquiring content are extremely large, extremely difficult to get to, and the real opportunities for independent filmmakers to get from A to Z, from toiling in their basement to maybe a Netflix deal is convoluted and strange, and there's no real clear path. So, organizations like ours that are about field building, that are about kind of long-term career building opportunities, professional development opportunities, have our work cut out for us to make sure that the filmmakers, the true independent filmmakers, are really not getting left behind as we see a shift towards supporting, I think, a handful of filmmakers, so to speak, that maybe already have the relationships with the major platforms that are buying the majority of content right now.
Anything you'd like to highlight about this the next festival?
Well, geez, 15 years ago, a lot of great surprises. I think for us, it's a year of milestones. Our Points North Fellowship is entering its 10th year, which means we've supported 60-plus projects in development. So we're going to have a lot more filmmakers here working on projects, pitching their projects to industry, connecting with audiences to make sure that they really know how to pitch their projects. And the other thing is, I would say, since we're on Maine Calling, is we have had this really two incredible programs that are Maine specific. One is Dear Go Docs, which is our annual kind of sidebar of work that is either shot in Maine or by Maine filmmakers, and that program has probably tripled in size this year, mainly because the work is so good, and that's something we've been able to see, track over the past decade. There's more filmmakers. There's more filmmakers working in Maine that want to work in Maine, that want to tell Maine stories, and that the quality that we're seeing is just exponentially better every year. So it's really exciting for us to feel like we're playing a small role in that. Maybe there were filmmakers that came to our festival and got inspired to stay involved and hone their craft. But you'll see a lot of incredible work this September. And then another one we're really focusing on is our Recovery in Maine program, which is really about the impact we believe nonfiction media can have on community building. So we take more issue-driven work and try and partner with grassroots activists and nonprofit organizations across the state. This specific program is about the opioid epidemic and drug misuse, and we've screened probably close to 25 screenings of an incredible film called Recovery Boys, which was created by a former Points North fellow. And it's really, I hope everyone that's listening to this will get a chance to go onto our website and really learn more about that program. It's near and dear to our entire staff. And it's a really, I think, unique opportunity for us to say, as a media arts organization, we can be doing more than just showing films or supporting filmmakers. This work is empowering communities to come together and tackle some of the more challenging subject matter and issues that we're facing as societies today.
Well, thank you. Before you go, I have a feeling a couple others want to chime in. Tom, go ahead.
I just think that the work that you're doing sounds absolutely great in trying to develop the talent here in Maine and create that content, especially around local issues and nonfiction type of productions. We recently, the MFA recently became a 501c3 so that we could help filmmakers with a fiscal sponsorship and that sort of thing to develop their own films. So it's really, really important doing what you're doing, and that's sort of our mission too, is to see people who want to make films in Maine and live in Maine and be able to make a living by making films in Maine.
Great.
Hey Ben, great to hear you.
Likewise.
I just made note, looking at your website recently, you have two programs now that are focused on short form. Is that right? One of them is an editing fellowship, and then there's a second one. And certainly, in my experience in terms of distribution, I'm finding that short films really become a calling card for the emerging filmmaker and are having an increasingly important role in terms of overall career development, not to mention that there are festivals cropping up and prize money available for short films that there never was, as recently as 5-6 years ago. But mention just something about those two programs that you have that are shorts oriented.
Yeah, certainly. Thank you, Louise. I couldn't agree more. Short form content is short form films are something we really kind of try to highlight. You know, the programming that we do around shorts are all free and open to the public. We've really tried to create an intense interest around it, and it's worked out well. So when we launched the Institute, we knew we needed a number of kind of week-long residencies, and we kind of scanned or surveyed the field and realized there was few opportunities for shorts filmmakers to kind of come together and focus on craft. So we launched a week-long editing residency that takes place the week prior to SIFF. It all kind of culminates in being at the festival and ideally having a cut or some changes in your cut that you're really excited about and can share with industry members. We choose four projects. I will say this, if the rest of the programming team is listening, I apologize, but I'm going to say if you're in Maine and you have a project that you are interested in submitted and you haven't and you maybe missed the deadline, just email us and we can certainly make some arrangements. Because I think Louise is exactly right. There are fewer opportunities for short filmmakers. And the reality is it's still a challenge to get short content made. They're expensive, but they are an incredible way certainly for younger filmmakers to get on the circuit, to get work out there that may be noticed, picked up by various platforms online. And again, another great step in building a sustainable career.
Ben, thanks so much for calling in. That's Ben Fowley with Points North Institute in the Camden International Film Festival. On the line with us now is John Courtney. He's the screenings programmer for the Portland Museum of Art and was longtime screenings programmer at Space Gallery. Thanks for calling in, John.
Hey, Jen, how are you doing?
Great. Over the years, you've brought so many interesting films to Maine viewers. How important are these venues like the Space Gallery and PMA for adding to the film-going culture in Maine?
Yeah, I think they're really critical. I think, sadly, Portland lost its last brick-and-mortar art house, the beloved Movies on Exchange, in 2009. And so we've this kind of a ragtag network of venues around Portland, including the Asodian Theater, pop-up places like Bayside Bowl's Rooftop Screening Series. The Nickelodeon tries to mix in, Indian Art House Fair with some of their bigger tentpole films to pay the bills, and then Space and the PMA. I think I've always kind of tried to create a patchwork in lieu of not having a dedicated theater where people can access films that are often hard to find online or just to enjoy them in a theatrical experience.
What do you look for when you select a film? Do you try to push people outside their comfort zone, or are you catering to the audience tastes, or a little of both?
Yeah, a little bit of both. I mean, to a certain extent, we're trying to pay bills for the films that we do, you know, to split the program that are more popular. Biographical films tend to bring in a lot of people. We have a Toni Morrison film coming up that seems to have a lot of interest in it. But there's also films that are just really great little films that I care a lot about that I think people should see. And they may not bring as many people in, but often the responses to those films are really visceral and potent. We're showing a film this weekend called The Proposal by the artist Jill Magid. And it's really a thoughtful wrestling of an artist with Luis Barragan, the Mexican architect's legacy and archive, and we're having a discussion after one of the screenings. So we try and do a mixture of things, and we're also doing more and more repertory. People are restoring more films. We're trying to work on more features of director series and films that have kind of gotten lost and have recently been restored.
Great. Well, thanks so much for joining us, John. I understand you had a busy day. I appreciate you taking the time to call. That's John Courtney, who does the film programming for the Portland Museum of Art and was formerly with Space Gallery. And we do need to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions about the film scene in Maine. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Theater at Monmouth's The Merry Wives of Windsor, Shakespeare's comedy where laughter reigns and feminine wisdom triumphs, now through August 18th. And Diversions Puzzles and Games, committed to offering fun, social, and technology-free ways to connect, at Hannaford Plaza by Main Mall and in downtown Portsmouth.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, New York Times columnist David Brooks talks about how his personal religious journey, from Judaism to a broader spirituality, has led to a sense of fulfillment. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
That's coming up this afternoon at 2 here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public broadcasts all the statewide emergency alert messages in Maine, while other local stations do not. You may wonder why you hear about severe weather happening on the other side of the state from where you are. Maine Public is the designated primary source for the entire state of Maine emergency alert system and is required to broadcast all the alerts, which are passed on to stations in the affected areas for them to broadcast. This is a valuable public service tool to help inform, alert, and warn citizens when situations warrant, and Maine Public is required to immediately interrupt normal programming and broadcast the EAS message as received in its entirety. Thank you for your understanding.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the film scene in Maine. Joining me, Tom Handel with the Maine Film Association and Portland Media Center. Louise Rosen, who's a longtime film distributor and leader in Maine's film community. And Ken Eisen with the Maine International Film Festival and Railroad Square Cinema. We have an email from Art. Festivals are an ideal way for new filmmakers producing their first roll-out film to be seen and recognized by an audience of viewers. It's the process that having enough funds in a budget that can be obtained. It is no more gratifying than having one's work shown in the public view. I think what Art is getting to is that after all that work, after all that planning to finally see your film shown and see how people are responding to it is something you can't even express.
Indeed. A film that I produced called Killing for Love about a wrongful conviction. When we had the opportunity to show it here in Maine, we had a number of people from that community who, you know, criminal defenders and others who had been wrongfully convicted. And to watch it and experience it with that audience, your local audience, and have their reaction to it, it's profound. It's really something.
Yeah, there are about 50 filmmakers coming to this year's Maine International Film Festival, and it's really the part that's thrilling to us because the audience and the filmmakers get to interact with each other. The filmmakers get to see how their film plays. The audience gets to give them instant feedback. And there's a very real interaction that goes on because most of these films are about subjects that are resonant in many, many different ways, whether directly or indirectly. And that is just the essence of human interchange and art in its most profound form, I think.
Yes, the development of those ideas in a group of people not only is good for the interaction and the community development on that issue, but also shows the filmmakers when they're there what works in their films, what's happening, what are the filmmakers doing that's provocative and prompts discussion, so you actually get to see how the mind receives the information you're putting out.
What works and what doesn't work.
Right,
what they need to tighten up, too, I'm guessing.
Right.
Yeah, we're going to go to Barbara, who's the executive director of the Maine Jewish Film Festival, Barbara Merson. Hi, Barbara.
Hi.
Go ahead.
So I just wanted to make a couple of points that hadn't been mentioned yet about festivals. One is that they are increasingly becoming year-round events. So, for example, for the Maine Jewish Film Festival, although our major festival is in March, we actually have a number of events going on this fall. So I know that we're not the only ones that are doing that. So that's sort of an interesting phenomenon. It's like the public sort of can't get enough of it. The other thing that I wanted to mention was the relationship of film with other arts. A number of our events and other film festival events incorporate things like concerts or, for example, we're showing a film as part of Portland Dance Month next fall or incorporate lectures or various other cooperative ventures also with museums. Film festivals shouldn't just be viewed as only about film.
All right.
We do lots of things.
Barbara, thank you so much for calling in. We're going to go to Anna on Facebook. Most of the members of our local film community that are not employed crewing or producing commercials have day jobs and get together to make movies on the weekend, often for the love of it. Those who do make a living typically do some commercial work. Any narrative work is typically in Boston or Canada. I really appreciated Tom's comment regarding out-of-state people being hired to do in-state commercial work. I am one of the people who feels that if we had a better film tax incentive in our state, those who do work in this industry would be able to stay home and make a living rather than needing to travel out of state as they do now. Obviously, it would need to have a stipulation that would require a certain percentage of the crew be local hires, but I think that's something that could really boost our local economy and provide opportunity for so many of us in the film community. Thoughts?
Yeah, right now, as Karen mentioned, the Maine Film Office is under the Bureau of Tourism, and that's great. It does bring money into the economy and all that sort of thing. But having laws, having a structure at the government level that reinforces or encourages people to do film in Maine and encourage content creators, grants for people to develop their ideas and bring content in here, it's really critical to the economy. I think that as a filmmaker's is such a collaborative process. There's a lot of different arts, and I think the last caller who just said that there's a lot more that goes into a film and film festivals than just the filmmaking. There's a lot of other disciplines that go into it, and so many more professions in Maine can be involved in filmmaking if we were more focused on bringing the producers and the content creators here or developing the ones that we have here.
I think one of the issues around this whole incentives question, and it's been going on for years now, is Maine's accounting system at the state level is based on a static fiscal note. And that means that any money for incentives, whether you're talking about the fishing industry or blueberries, as you were discussing yesterday, has to be set aside at the beginning of the budget cycle. So that's money that has to come out of the budget and not be spent. Film, for so many people, feels like such an intangible. And I also think that there's a misattribution that it's, we're lining the pockets of people in Hollywood or, you know, however that kind of misunderstanding gets going. But there's obviously in a state that is not, you know, super wealthy, the notion of setting money aside to provide incentives is, it's got some resistance. I guess I feel that a lot of where our growth could be in this area is probably much more within the independent community. And by that, I mean indie films that are budgeted at, say, 10, 15 million and under rather than bigger studio pictures. And that there are ways of, you know, Maine is a very attractive place and there's so much here and there's so many great locations and there is a lot of talent. So I think that in a sense, where we pitch ourselves, at what level we're pitching ourselves, makes a difference. And it may not be that, you know, that Hollywood production necessarily.
I'm going to go to an email from Melissa. Please mention Bucksport's International Maritime Film Festival. It's a juried festival of short and feature-length films about maritime topics and has been gaining popularity over the last few years. Happens the last weekend of September in the Alamo Theater, which is part of Northeast Historic Film and is put on by Main Street Bucksport. All caps here. Fabulous. We're going to go to Dylan calling from Bangor. Hi, Dylan. Go ahead. And if you could be quick, that'd be great.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. I appreciate your show. I listen to it every day. I haven't heard anybody mention anything about drive-in theaters. They're classics. I mean, obviously, I'm 40 years old. I grew up going to them when we were kids. Why do they seem like they're fading now? And are there any left in Maine?
Well, actually, there is a Maine Outdoor Film Festival, and happening during the summer. And also, MFA is doing outdoor screenings both at a Bayside Bowl and the Eastern Prom. So there is a push to get back to that genre.
There are drive-ins still within the state. I know there is one in Skowhegan, and I think there's a couple of others as well. I share your fondness for drive-ins, Dylan. I think they're really quite wonderful. In a way, it's a horrible way to watch a film, and against everything that I believe in. In another way, it's not, because
the audio isn't the best.
It may not be the best, but you still get it is a group experience, you know, and it's unique and kind of wonderful, and it's a great setting. I think one reason why they've gone away is because it was a way to pack a family into a car and get in for $10 or something like that at one point, and before that, it was like a makeout session kind of thing to do. So now, with neither of those necessities being quite what they might have been at one time, and other alternatives, that's taken away part of the audience for that. And certainly, the season for drive-ins is pretty short in Maine relative to where they are elsewhere in the world.
Dylan, thanks for your call. Jennifer is calling from Brunswick. Jennifer, if you could be quick, that'd be great.
Sure. Thank you for taking my call. I just want to put out a shout out to Diana Norwood of Maine Productions. They're a Maine location scouting and location management service, and she just knows Maine so well, and she knows Maine's communities and personalities, and she just does a great job of bringing all kinds of productions, film and print, Hollywood, independent, to many diverse places in Maine. And
great.
Such a good job.
Thanks, Jennifer, for calling in and telling us about her. And we're going to go very quickly to Alan in Portland. Hi, Alan. We're squeezing you in. If you could be quick, that'd be great.
Hey, I just wanted to mention that while supporting the festivals is really important, there's lots of support that local people could give to filmmakers that are producing short films all over the state almost every weekend. So I just kind of would give a shout out to people to try and like give to those Indiegogo campaigns or offer your house as a location, bake a meal, do something to help a filmmaker finish their film.
Oh, what a great final call. Thank you so much, Alan. I know before we go, Louise, you wanted to talk about what you think could really move Maine forward in the film industry.
Well, I've long felt that we could really use a cinematheque here in Maine, a place that a physical presence where materials could be stored, where training could go on, office space could be provided for filmmakers, community could come together, another screening venue we certainly could use. It could be multi-purpose, and a way for some of these more remote film-related operations like Northeast Historic Film in Bucksport, which is an absolutely unbelievable international-level archive facility, but has no representation down in the most densely populated part of the state. I think that some of the other festivals could have could make use of having space in a more central area. So I'd love to see
a cinema. That happen?
Money, of course. But I think a will to bring it together. I think that as the film community here is gaining kind of critical mass, those sorts of ideas supported as a cultural initiative can get some traction. So it's close to my heart. I keep musing on it.
Well, Louise, thank you so much. She is Louise Rosen and involved in film production and distribution, formerly led the Maine Jewish Film Festival, also founding director of the Points North Documentary Forum at the Camden International Film Festival. Also here with me, Ken Eisen, co-founder and programming director for the Maine International Film Festival, which starts tomorrow and lasts 9 days. There's information on our website and Facebook page. Ken is also co-founder of Railroad Square Cinema. I don't know why I'm having such a hard time saying railroad today. And Tom Handel, president of the Maine Film Association and executive director of the Portland Media Center. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. A quick note about a community event, Maine Public's Tell Me More tour will be in Ogunquit this evening, starting at 5:30 at the Ogunquit Museum of American Art. The news team will be there to hear about issues and topics that matter to you. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.